PeaceHealth Peace Harbor Medical Center presents Doc Talk, an informative health series educating our community on the services provided at PeaceHealth. We will begin with our host, George Henry, after these messages.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
With flu season just around the corner, now is the prime time to schedule your annual flu shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommend that everyone aged 6 months and older, and especially older adults, get vaccinated against the flu. PeaceHealth Medical Group in Florence has adult and pediatric flu shots available. Call 541-997-7134 to make an appointment for your flu shot today. It only takes a minute and helps protect you, your family, and the community this flu season. So call 541-997-7134 today. On our December edition of Doc Talk, we have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Willie Foster. He's the medical director of the emergency department at Peace Harbor Medical Center. He's also the vice president of medical affairs. That sounds like a pretty lofty title. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you for having me here. I'm looking forward to this.
Cool. Now, let's start with, I like to introduce you to everybody. That's kind of how I get started there, so I can learn a little bit more about you and the folks out there can learn a little bit. Tell me a little bit about your background, say your education.
I wasn't planning to be a doctor in high school. You know, some people know they want to be a doctor from a young age.
Right.
In high school, even in college, I really wasn't leaning towards medicine. It was after I finished college thinking, what do I want to do next? Got some exposure to medicine down in Mexico at a small mission hospital. And I said, yeah, I think that I want to pursue medicine. So went back to med school and from there.
Let's go back a little bit then, Harry. When you first went to college, what were you thinking? What was your plan?
I was always good in science, so I was a science major, ended up majoring in chemistry. I was thinking maybe I'd go drill wells overseas, something along those lines, go into hydrology or something.
So it was never to be an actor, musician, you know?
No. It was going to be science. That's what I was good at. And when I discovered medicine, because there really wasn't, you know, a bunch of medical people in our family where I had a large exposure to it, I go, well, I could do this, and I've enjoyed it.
Did you have a sense when you were younger, though, before college, that you had a bedside manner, so to speak, or a caring for people that was sort of out of the ordinary that you didn't notice in other people?
Well, I've always, you know, wanted to care for people and help people. I mean, that's why I was thinking of going into, you know, hydrology and drill wells in developing countries is to help people. So that's certainly in the medicine's in the same realm.
Right. And so when you got back from Mexico, you went to med school. Right. Where'd you do that at?
I did my medical school at UC San Diego.
Okay.
And loved it. It was kind of interesting. I mean, people might find this hard to believe, but back then medical school was free.
Wow.
I mean, you know, people think college and med school is expensive. Well, back in the 80s in California, the University of California system was flush with money and higher education was essentially free.
And they needed doctors probably too, right? Or is that it was all free.
All education was free. I mean, undergrad and med school was.
Wow, why didn't I hear about that? And I missed that. Someone didn't give me the memo on that.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, education was free in California in the 1980s and prior. And so, yeah, med school was a great time. It's interesting. A lot of people said, well, it must have been hard to go to med school at, you know, a place like San Diego. You never want to study. You know, the sun is always shining. And I said, no, I think it was the direct opposite, that you knew that any time you could take an hour break and go for a run on the beach and get it out of you and then, boom, come back and study versus being someplace where it's horrible, cold, winter, rain, and you're stuck inside all the time. So the weather in San Diego was not a distraction. I think it was a benefit. It was a relief valve. Hey, I need to go for a run on the beach, clear my head. Boom, you do that. You're back to studying.
So you say run on the beach. So were you kind of always a healthy person? Did you do kind of
I was always active, healthy, you know, outdoors, backpacking, skiing, that kind of stuff.
Are you a California guy originally or?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, my dad was Air Force. I was born in Japan, lived there for a few months, and then Alabama, Virginia, Southern California. He retired and we moved to Northern California. But most of my undergraduate and then med school education was all in California back in the 70s and 80s.
So. Okay.
You were going to say something. Did we lose the track?
Well, when I was talking about med school, because it was free, many of us did not rush through med school, and we took 5 years to complete our training instead of four. And we would spread our last year, which is elective rotations, over a couple of years. So we spent, my wife and I spent 2 years basically overseas in my fourth and fifth year, 9 months in India, Pakistan, Nepal, 4 months in Africa, where we would do a month rotation in a mission hospital, travel for a month, do a month rotation at some NGO or other type hospital, travel for a month. So a very wonderful experience for the last year, year and a half of med school.
And she works in medicine too?
She was a nurse. We're separated now, okay. But yeah, she was a pediatric nurse for many years.
Right. What kind of things, other than running on the beach, what kind of things did you do to kind of take your mind off stuff, take your mind off studies? You mentioned skiing.
Right. Well, not so much. Active. I mean, in San Diego, skiing right. is no, a bit yeah. ways away. But, you know, yeah. No, a run on the beach, a bicycle ride. You know, even at lunch break in between classes, it was often nice enough that we just go outside and throw the Frisbee for 15 minutes, you know, just as a release versus having to sit inside watching it rain outside. So.
So what did you like most about med school? What classes or what things did you really appreciate?
Well, it's interesting. You know, when you're in med school, you're very, you know, centered in on all the science of medicine. You know,
the
biochemistry,
yeah.
the pharmacology, the pathophysiology, and all that stuff is very important to form a foundation. But once you get out into practice, so much more of it becomes what I call the art of medicine. I mean, nowadays, nobody asks me, well, what grade did you get in biochemistry? Or
right.
what was your board score in, you know, pharmacology? What makes people a good doctor is bedside manner, relating to patients, answering their questions, having them feel that you care. And I mean, that is taught in med school, but as med students, we're much more, I got to learn all this basic science stuff. And you do. There's no doubt about that. But in retrospect, and I think med schools are doing a better job now of incorporating more of what I call the art of medicine earlier on into it.
The art of medicine and the art of being an emergency room doctor is a little bit different. I have a friend who passed away a couple of years ago. He was a osteopath or orthopedic surgeon, I'm sorry.
Right.
And then he went into emergency medicine later in life because it was something that he was kind of retired and he would just kind of help out there.
Right.
And it seemed to me like it's a whole different set of skills, isn't it? Or it's just a way to apply those skills differently?
It's probably a way to apply the skills differently. I mean, the anatomy, the pharmacology, the microbiology, that's all the same across all the disciplines.
Right.
I mean, the basis, but...
But it's the tension, the stress, the immediate attention that somebody needs in a genuine emergency situation that's a little bit different.
Right. And so, I mean, I have, you know, friends, you know, doctors that would never want to work in the emergency room. They want to know, yeah, on my schedule today, Mrs. Smith is coming in for this, and they like that. And there's other people, I mean, I don't know if it's a fair category to put us in, but a lot of ER docs have been called adrenaline junkies, you know, that we like that rush of what's coming in next, handling an emergency. I wouldn't say that's true across the board, but there's a lot of doctors that say, there's no way you would get me to work in the emergency department. I want to, you know, be more in control. And in the emergency room, we never know what's coming in the door next.
I would think, though, and of course, I don't know, not being a doctor, I would think that your skill set is pretty much heightened, you know, to really great levels because you're having to adjust to different things. Like one minute you might be sewing up an arm, the next
right.
minute you might be doing, you know, fixing a bullet hole, you know, who knows?
Right. We don't have too many bullet holes here in Florence.
Thank goodness.
Right.
Thank goodness.
Right,
yeah.
right. But no, I mean, you never know what's going to come in next. And I mean, typically in an office practice, you have one patient, you see him for 15, 20 minutes, you're done, you move on to the next one. I mean, in the ED at any one time, you might have 5, 6, 7 patients there in different rooms that you're
right.
in different stages of
care.
Working up. So
yeah.
you've seen this patient, you're waiting for some labs to come back. Okay, based on those lab findings, maybe I need to order this test. So yeah, you're often managing multiple patients, maybe not at the same time, but, you know, going back and forth. And so that's certainly different than an office practice. And some people find that exhilarating. Other people go, no way, I'm not going to ever work in the ER. So, yeah.
We're talking with Dr. Willie Foster. He is the medical director of the emergency department at Peace Harbor Medical Center, also the vice president of medical affairs. We'll find out more about what that is coming up here in just a minute on this edition of Doc Talk.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
With flu season just around the corner, now is the prime time to schedule your annual flu shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommend that everyone aged 6 months and older, and especially older adults, get vaccinated against the flu. Peace Health Medical Group in Florence has adult and pediatric flu shots available. Call 541-997-7134 to make an appointment for your flu shot today. It only takes a minute and helps protect you, your family, and the community this flu season. So call 541-997-7134 today.
We're back on Doc Talk with Dr. Willie Foster, Medical Director of the Emergency Department at Peace Harbor Medical Center, Vice President of Medical Affairs. And I was here 2 years ago. We were doing Doc Talk a couple years ago, and I was getting ready to move to start a new job, and they were remodeling the emergency room. They were remodeling the facilities there, putting a new entranceway and all that. Tell me a little bit about some of the changes that have happened, because you guys are celebrating a year now, right?
Right. A year. It was in October that we fully moved in, you know, to the new ED. And, I mean, if you had to say one word, the change has been drastic. I mean, if you looked at our old emergency room that was there for over 15 years, I mean, we had four rooms that were down a hallway. You had to walk down a hallway and open a regular door to walk into a patient's room, which from an emergency room perspective is kind of bizarre. We like to be able to see our patients all around us from a central right. nurse's station. I mean, maybe there might be a screen or a drape covered, but the idea of walking down a hallway and opening a door to even go into the most critical patient room, it's hard to imagine we got by with that for so long. All our whole nurse's station, where all the doctors and nurses lived and worked, was tiny. I mean, it was about 10 by 10 feet, you know, and it's hard to imagine how we didn't kill each other in that small space over all those years.
And how long had you been working in the emergency department? Were you there the entire time that you've been at Peace Harbor?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I've been at Peace Harbor now for 9 years. So when I first came to work here, yes, I was in the old ED for the first 7 years. So when it was decided that we needed a new ED, I mean, it was a remarkable experience. I'm pretty sure that most of the listeners, or maybe not all of them, are aware, but it was the community that paid for the new ED. The community raised the $5 million. That was not something that Peace Health gave us. They had given $5 million to upgrade the central power unit, which needed to be upgraded first. They provided for that. But the actual $5 million for the construction and remodel of the new ED was all based on donations from the community, which is quite remarkable.
So obviously things change over time.
Right.
And incrementally so much in maybe the last decade, things have been constantly going. So
right.
upgrades and things like that. So what kind of things did you have to do as far as technology versus planning for maybe the next set of changes that might come very quickly down the road?
I mean, one of the biggest things that happened at the same time as we moved into the new ED was going to an electronic medical record. And the clinics had gone several years before. It was kind of a gradual rollout. But we actually went to the electronic medical record just about the same time we moved into the ED. And that was probably more of a challenge. I mean, a room's a room, but it was nice having more room. But getting used to the electronic medical record has taken more time.
So. Is that something like you can have like an iPad or something with you and you can bring up the patient's records right there?
Potentially
instantly?
It could be, you know, on an iPad. I mean, we typically go back to our desk and work on it there, but everything is, you know, computerized. That's what an electronic medical record means, is that everything is being entered into the computer from the get-go, so to speak, and orders are being put in that way.
And so it can be done at a central location as opposed to in the old days, writing on a piece of paper, that gets handed to somebody else. That gets handed
right.
to somebody else.
And, right. I mean, one of the new requirements in medicine is that, you know, a vast percentage of the orders are actually put in by the doctor. that, you know, before we used to check off stuff and it went to a ward clerk who would enter that into a computer or send paper requests or whatever. And now many of the orders are being directly put in by the physician via the computer, and then it shows up in the lab, and the lab comes and draws the blood, or x-ray comes and does the x-ray and stuff. So
now in the new ED, you've got a central nurses station, doctor
right.
station?
We have a central nurses station that gives us a view into almost every patient room. The square footage went from 3,000 square feet to 7,000 square feet, so doubled the actual physical space. We had four rooms before that had six beds, so a couple of our rooms had two beds and just had a curtain down the middle. So, I mean, you could be in a room with another patient, and I mean, if I'm talking to the patient, the next thing, a curtain's not hiding the conversation
right.
at all. So, I mean, patient privacy, I mean, for many, many years, that was the standard. I mean, you didn't have private rooms. You just had curtains. So we've gone from four rooms and six beds up to nine, you know, private individual rooms, plus two more that are not technically rooms. They're triage rooms. I mean, we can see patients in them, but they're not counted as a patient room. So we've more than doubled not only our physical size, but also our number of beds, essentially.
So how many rooms do you have that you can do actual emergency surgery in? How many rooms?
What emergency surgery?
Well, I mean, you know, an emergency procedure if you had to.
Right. I mean, nine of the rooms.
Nine of the rooms are
big enough, overhead lights. We have two rooms that are for our most critical patients that are bigger, easier to have more people in there, you know, bring in other equipment. But even the normal rooms, I could sew up a laceration right. and stuff. But if somebody was critically injured and we were doing more procedures on them, trying to stabilize them, they would be in one of our two resuscitation or trauma rooms.
And have those rooms also been upgraded with technology and stuff? Or?
Well, they have. I mean, both of those two trauma rooms have a overhead lift system, which is nice. You know, so you can move, you know, a patient that was mm-hmm. on the heavier side without injuring your staff. So they both have an overhead. Certainly, the monitors have been upgraded, so they automatically put the vital signs into the patient electronic medical record versus somebody having to, you know, write them in, mm-hmm. that kind of information flows into the electronic medical record.
All right. Well, cool. I'll tell you what, let's take another quick break now, and we'll be back in a minute with Dr. Willie Foster, Medical Director of the Emergency Department at Peace Harbor Medical Center, Vice President of Medical Affairs. We're going to find out what that means coming up next on Doc Talk.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
With flu season just around the corner, now is the prime time to schedule your annual flu shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommend that everyone aged 6 months and older, and especially older adults, get vaccinated against the flu. Peace Health Medical Group in Florence has adult and pediatric flu shots available. Call 541-997-7134 to make an appointment for your flu shot today. It only takes a minute and helps protect you, your family, and the community this flu season. So call 541-997-7134 today.
We're back with Dr. Willie Foster, Medical Director of the Emergency Department at Peace Harbor Medical Center, Vice President of Medical Affairs. Before we get into the Vice President of Medical Affairs part, let's talk a little bit about the space that you provided. The technology is something that you guys have been keeping up with all along, right?
Right. I mean, like 10 years ago, we got a portable ultrasound the doctors could use. That's still functional, works good. We've had that. That was not something we needed to get. A GlideScope, which is an easier way to intubate if they need a breathing tube. It's a video camera. We've had that for a number of years. So there wasn't a whole lot of new equipment we needed to get for the ED. We got some new beds and new monitors. But the biggest thing about the ED was just having a space that's going to allow us to take care of patients in a better way for hopefully the next 20 years before we outgrow it.
Right. And that's a good thing.
You right. know,
keeping
right.
up with that and everything. All right. Well, let's talk about the administrative part of it for a little bit here. You are the Vice President of Medical Affairs. What exactly
right.
is it?
As far as I understand, that means I go to a number of different meetings, different committees that the hospital has. I mean, there's certainly, you know, the clinical aspect of medicine, you know, seeing a patient, taking care of them. But there's a whole lot that goes on in a medical practice or a hospital that doesn't involve what we call direct patient care, where you're looking at quality measures, where you're looking at process, outcomes, patient satisfaction scores, all this right. kind of stuff.
All things that eventually affect the patient.
Right.
But if you don't do them right behind the scenes, then it could prop
right.
things up.
Right. So, I mean, one thing as vice president of medical affairs, you know, one meeting that I just got done with earlier today was a quality meeting that we have every month. There's a number of different people there. You know, it involves the heads of different departments, you know, radiology, pharmacy, and these meetings work best when there's cross-representation across the hospital, not just administrative people, but also people that are in clinical practice like myself. So we can say, these are some issues that we're seeing. How can we come up with a corrective plan to deal with that? Patient satisfaction. What's our patients, you know, we send out surveys, get sent out to patients. And why is our score slipping a little bit? Is there something we can do to improve the patient experience here? So a lot of the stuff I do under my hat of vice president of medical affairs is serve on different committees to address different issues across the hospital and medical setting.
All right. Well, one thing we haven't really talked about is the staffing there. Let's brag on your staff a little bit and the folks that are there working with you.
Right. It's quite interesting that we're a fairly small ED. If you look at, you know, the volume of patients we see about 10,000 patients a year, which is a fairly small ED. You know, they're, I mean, for example, Riverbend, don't quote me on this, probably sees 60 to 70 thousand.
Wow.
So, I mean, 10,000 patients a year is a relatively small emergency department. But having said that, all seven of the ER physicians that work in the ED are residency trained in emergency medicine and board certified. And there's probably only a handful of hospitals in the United States that see 10,000 patients a year that could claim that. A lot of these smaller hospitals would have a hard time attracting somebody who had done their training after med school in emergency medicine. It might be a family practice doc, or as you were talking to your friend who had done orthopedics and then later moved into emergency medicine. I'm not saying they're not qualified to work in the emergency room, but that wasn't their primary training. So the fact that for 15 years now, all of our physicians have been residency trained, board certified in emergency medicine speaks a lot for the hospital, and that we've been able to attract, you know, doctors that want to come here. A lot of them want to be in a bigger hospital in a bigger city. So
right.
we are very fortunate that we've been able to do that.
Okay, that's the doctor staff.
Right.
Now we got the nursing staff too.
And the nursing staff is excellent. I mean, we have a whole spectrum of nurses that have been doing emergency medicine for 20 plus years, plus other nurses that are relatively new. Most nurses don't go into emergency medicine right after they finish nursing school because it's a more intense area. Usually it would be rare for a nursing manager to hire somebody straight out of nursing school.
Right, a little more experience with
right,
some,
right.
you know,
but
building
we do,
up to.
Right, so I mean, they'll work on the floor for a couple of years. But we do have, you know, a fair number of younger nurses that have done a few years on the floor and now are in the ED. So it's good that we have a spectrum of nurses. So as the ones who have been there 20 years retire, there'll be ones that have been there for 2, 3, 4 years and stuff. So the nurses are excellent. We have incredible backup from administration. Before I came here 9 years ago, over the past 25 years I've been doing emergency medicine, I've probably been in 20 different emergency departments over time. When I used to live in California, I'd often work in 3 or 4 different emergency rooms in any one month, a couple of shifts here, a couple of shifts there. Just the group I worked with had a large number of contracts, and it kind of depended. I would say the administration at this hospital is the most approachable administration I've ever worked with, and so that's been a real pleasure to see administration so closely involved in everything.
And in a good way, where they want to see positive
right,
progress.
Right,
come
right.
From
it's
that,
not them coming saying, oh, look, you're messing up again.
It's not micromanaging.
No, it's not that. Yeah. But it's being very involved with everything and being very approachable. So
what are some of the things that are, is there anything coming down the pike that that is going to be helpful to the emergency department in the next coming years? Or is there anything you guys still want to accomplish there?
Well, there's, you know, there's continually things that are changing. You know, one example would be the whole thing of strokes, patients having a stroke. It's a very time-sensitive diagnosis that, you know, if you developed weakness in your arm 2 days ago and you show up in the ED now, there's very little that can be done. But if you show up in the first few hours, there's a lot that can be done. And a large part of this is in connection with, you know, Riverbend, which is part of the Peace Health system. So currently, if you call the ambulance because you think you're having a stroke, they will do a screen. And if you are positive on this screen, like you can't move your arm and, you know, are having trouble speaking, that could be an indication that you actually have a pretty big vessel in the brain that's blocked off. And they will bypass our hospital and go directly to Riverbend, where there are specialists that can put a catheter up and hopefully pull a clot out if that's right. What it is. And that's very time sensitive. And that is something new that Riverbend's developed in the last, you know, few years. And we are part of that. If you don't meet that criteria, you would come here and get a workup. You still may be transferred over there. But for patients that from the very beginning, it's clear they're having a major stroke, will, you know, be sent to the most appropriate care, which is not to come here and get a medicine to break up the clot, but actually go to where they could go up and pull the clot out.
I just think that's fascinating that they could go in and they probably go through quite a bit of...
Right. They can either go in the arm or down in the groin, just like when they go up to the heart to put a stent in. It's similar to that, but instead of going into the vessels in their heart, they're going up through the vessels in the neck up into the brain, not into tiny vessels, but into the bigger vessels and pulling out a clot. And so that's something that is relatively new. It's only been in the last 6 months that the ambulance has been able to screen for this. And if you have a certain, you know, significant deficit, they will take you directly to Riverbend.
That's pretty cool that they have the ability to do that. That's pretty awesome.
So, I mean, that's an advance. It's providing the best care for our patients, even though, you know, we live in a small town and there's not a big hospital here. We don't have specialists that come to this hospital. We're very well tied in with other places that do have this specialty care, and we can almost always get patients there in a timely manner, whether that's directly in a few cases or transferred there once we've identified an issue that we can't handle in our emergency room or hospital.
And so, although we're talking about, you know, the emergency room or the emergency department specifically, still, you know, if there's emergencies like a stroke or that, it's very important, you know, to get to the doctor as soon as possible.
Right.
Because and I mean, and I minutes guess can, minutes can make a difference in whether you walk away with impaired abilities or not.
Yeah. And that's always a interesting thing. We always have people asking, well, when should I go to the emergency room, and, you know, or when can I see my doctor? When can I go to urgent care? And it's really hard to have a answer that's going to fit every situation. So if people call up on the phone, whether they're calling up the walk-in clinic or the emergency room, we don't tell them, no, you go here, you go there. If you think it's an emergency room, the emergency room is open. You know, we're never going to tell somebody, don't come here, come here. You have to make that call. So the bottom line is emergency is always defined by the patient. I can't expect the patient to have the medical training that I do to say that's not really an emergency. You know, I might think that after I talk to them, but they don't know at the time. I mean, they're having chest pain and they're concerned about it. They come to the emergency room. When I hear their story and ask them some questions, in my mind, it's not an emergency at all, but they don't know that from the beginning. So
the difference between open heart surgery and Pepto-Bismol.
Right. And so, I mean, in general, you should come to the emergency department if you are having new severe pain or a sudden worsening of pain. Like if you've had pain in your knee for a week and it's been about the same all week long, I'm not sure that coming to the emergency room is the most appropriate place. It's been going on for a week. I mean, it's unlikely to be truly an emergency. Now, if it suddenly got much worse last night, that's different. I, you know, think that's an appropriate reason.
Or if it's this big on Monday and it's this big on Friday.
Right. So, I mean, sudden severe or a sudden increase in pain or swelling or confusion, shortness of breath. You know, if you said, well, I've been kind of short of breath for the last week, I'm not sure there's anything we're going to do in the emergency room or shaking to figure that out. Now, if you've been short of breath for a week and suddenly last night you got severe worsening, yeah, that's appropriate. Yeah. So it's very difficult to tell people over the radio, in a phone call, even in person, when do you come to the ED and when do you not? But if it's severe, if it's suddenly worse, if you're concerned at all, I mean, even though in retrospect I might say you could have gone to your doctor, I'd rather err on the side of caution and have you come to the emergency department.
All right. So, Dr. Willie Foster, thank you so much for joining us on Doc Talk today. Appreciate having you here.
Well, thank you very much. And I feel kind of fortunate that I work in a job where I say, I hope I never see you.
Yeah.
And if I do see you, I can say, I hope I never see you again. Okay. But we're always here if you need us.
All right. Thank you so much. Dr. Willie Foster, he's the medical director of the emergency department at Peace Harbor Medical Center, vice president of medical affairs. That's it for this month's edition of Doc Talk.
This has been Doc Talk, presented by Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center. For more information on the program and services provided, visit peacehealth.org.